Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, could this bold new law finally fix streaming? Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Good evening. It isn't evening, but...
It's not evening.
I said good afternoon on last week's edition because I thought just saying hello there was getting boring. And I figure that although it's not evening as we say this, it could be as people are listening.
Right.
That's why I said good evening.
Well, good. We've now heard both of our voices so people can differentiate between us. And that part of the podcast is done. As ever, we're going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when the UK's pandemic restrictions were extended by another month, causing the cancellation or postponement of between 4,000 and 5,000 live music events, depending on which organisation you speak to. And has the government now finally announced that state-backed cancellation insurance for festivals that everyone was asking for? No, it hasn't.
No, it has not. So yes, as expected, I believe we talked about this on last week's set list. The UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced at the start of last week that this plan that he had to lift most of the remaining COVID restrictions that were in force on the 21st of June, which would have allowed full capacity gigs and concerts and club nights to return, is not going to happen. Pushed it back probably by another month to the 19th of July. That's the current target date because of concerns about this Delta variant of the coronavirus. For our listeners in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, it must be annoying that everyone reports on Boris Johnson's announcements on these things that only actually relate to England, although similar things are happening, but on slightly different timelines, with slightly different announcements, on slightly different days elsewhere in the UK. The basic point is that as this podcast goes out, everyone was hoping that would be the day when live music would return properly without the social distancing requirements. That is now not happening. As a result, the live industry has said another 4 weeks of being in limbo. We need more support for venues and promoters and live music companies, artists, etc., to get us through those extra 4 weeks. At the very least, the absolute minimum, the general COVID support schemes that have been in place for a while now, many of which are due to expire at the end of June, must be extended through to at least the 19th of July. That hasn't happened as we record this, with one exception, which is to do with a rule that was in place to stop commercial landlords from evicting tenants because of rent arrears. That particular provision has been extended all the way into 2022, actually. But most of the other COVID support schemes, which are due to not necessarily completely disappear, but to sort of become less extensive at the end of this month, as we record it, there has not been a postponement on that, even though there has been a postponement on the lifting of the rules. And yeah, no new measures to support the live sector and the wider creative industries through this extra delay, including, as you've said, the much demanded but still refused state-backed insurance for music festivals. That ain't coming anytime soon either. So basically, the whole live sector back in limbo for at least another month was the development last week, which we kind of knew was going to happen. In fact, we pretty much reported on it on last week's podcast. But we had confirmation of it at the beginning of last week.
But as with anything COVID-related, who knows what will have been announced by the time this episode of the podcast actually goes out. The government is prone to making statements at inopportune moments that torpedo whatever we've already said on the show, which is why we're not talking about this at any length. That said, we've done that disclaimer on the last two episodes and nothing unexpected has happened. But... well, you never can tell. We live in hope still that the government might give us a surprise announcement that actually is something good. You never know.
Yeah, we will be happy for this podcast to be out of date if it was a positive announcement that came out, less so if it's a negative announcement. But in the ideal world, if the government could make sure that any COVID announcements it's going to make are in our inbox by the end of play Thursday, before we record the podcast on Friday, before the podcast goes out on Monday, that would be really helpful. I mean, actually, it has to be said, in recent months, because everything the government's going to be announced is usually leaked several days before it's made. When they make the announcements on Monday, we do know before the podcast is recorded, which is possibly why this disclaimer has not been required in recent weeks. But we put it here anyway, just in case. And we also ensure that anything to do with COVID is not what we are here to talk about.
No, later on we'll be discussing Sony Music's announcement that it will stop paying royalties to unrecouped artists who signed deals in the 20th century. But first, we need to talk about Kevin's new law. Labour MP Kevin Brennan last week presented a private members' bill to the UK Parliament with the very catchy name, the Copyright open parenthesis Rights and Remuneration of Musicians etc. close parenthesis Bill.
Yeah, etc. Musicians, etc.
Yes.
Not sure what's covered by the etc. Artists, lyricists, producers, instrumentalists, beat makers, rappers, any of those may be covered by the etc. Or maybe not. Maybe you have to be strictly a musician to benefit from this new bill. Who knows? It's too ambiguous in its title. And it has to be said, although we're talking about this proposed private members bill that was submitted to Parliament last week by Kevin Brennan MP, we don't yet have a copy of the bill, so we don't completely know what's being proposed, except what Kevin Brennan has said, a little tease that he gave as to what this private members bill is all about.
Yeah, the page on Parliament's website where the bill should be suggests that it hasn't been written yet, but I'm sure it has, or at least it's very close. He's just got to post it in. But as you said, he did give a little tease to this. So he said that the idea is to amend UK copyright law in order to create a new right to fair remuneration for musicians when their work is played on streaming platforms. There, he did only mention musicians. There was no etc. So we still don't know who the etc. are. But this proposed legislation is a direct response to the Fix Streaming and Broken Record campaigns that we've talked about many times on Setlist, which have called for musicians to have a statutory right to equitable remuneration when their music is streamed.
Yes, now, given that we have decided to talk about the Copyright Rights and Remuneration of Musicians, etc. bill here on Setlist, you might be expecting us to now go through in detail this proposal has been made by the Musicians Union and the Ivors Academy, the Fixed Streaming Campaign, the Broken Record Campaign, to introduce so-called performer equitable remuneration for streams. However, I think I'm right in saying that we have explained that in detail on approximately 78 editions of Setlist over the last 78 weeks. It certainly feels like that.
It's come up, hasn't it?
The point is, you may remember, aside from us talking about it on those specials that we did last year, as the whole Fix Streaming Broken Record campaign started to gain momentum, where we went through all of the various debates and issues with the way that streaming works and the way that music industry licenses the streaming services, the way that streaming money is shared out between artists and songwriters and labels and publishers. We also talked at length about specifically the equitable remuneration debate when that letter was sent to that Boris Johnson, organised by the MBU, the Ivors and the Broken Record Campaign, signed by a load of artists, which came on the back of the Select Committee inquiry in Parliament on the economics of streaming. And that letter basically set out two or three specific demands from the musician and songwriter community, the most talked about one of which was that UK copyright law be rewritten so that this thing called performer equitable remuneration applies specifically to the making available element of the sound recording copyright, which would mean that artists would be getting at least some of their streaming royalties directly through the collective licensing system at industry standard rates. So what artists and musicians receive, at least in part, would not be dependent on the deals that they've done with their labels or distributors. That's what that letter said, and I know we talked about it, I think... Well, there's now been two versions of that letter, haven't there? And I think we talked about it on Setlist when the first version of that letter was sent.
Yeah, that original letter was signed by 156 different artists who were then joined earlier this month by the Rolling Stones, Van Morrison, Tom Jones and Barry Gibb, among others, to further call on Boris Johnson to just sort it out. Sort the whole thing out, Boris.
Yeah, lots of people noted when the second letter was sent, which was just the first letter, but with more artist names at the bottom. But because the Rolling Stones had been added, also the estates of John Lennon and George Harrison were added. There was something about Boris Johnson's Desert Island Disc choices. All of the British artists who he chose when he went on Desert Island Discs have now signed his letter or something. Because those are the boxes you have to tick to get Boris Johnson to do something, apparently.
Yeah, the estate of Joe Strummer was also in there because when Boris Johnson was on Desert Island Discs, he chose The Clash as one of his favourite bands, which I still think about at least twice a week in disbelief.
Was it David Cameron who picked the Smiths, or did he just say he liked the Smiths in some article?
I think he said he liked the Smiths repeatedly, I think also on Desert Island Discs.
And he said that in an era where Morrissey was just tipping. So liking the Smiths didn't seem right for a right-wing politician, whereas maybe now it does.
Yeah, it was really Johnny Marr who took against that and put out lots of public statements prohibiting David Cameron from liking the Smiths, which David Cameron did not adhere to. He just carried on going, misquoting their lyrics in Parliament like a true fan.
Until he held some silly referendum and then had to resign and everyone forgot he existed. Talking of Boris Johnson's Desert Island Discs, so there was also Beatles in there. So you've got the children of John Lennon and George Harrison. And of course, Paul McCartney has also signed it. I think he had the Rolling Stones, didn't he? So that was why the Rolling Stones being added was important. And I can't remember who else there was. There was music by quite a few dead German composers. I remember that. They haven't commented on this, actually, to date. Their signatures, Beethoven's signature, is not on this letter. That's suspicious.
I just quickly looked it up. Yeah, I think we've covered them. We've got the Beatles, we've got the Rolling Stones, we've got Van Morrison, we've got the Clash. Yeah, Beethoven didn't sign it. Brahms didn't sign it. Bach didn't sign it. And most surprising of all, Booker T and the MGs haven't signed it. Come on, Booker T.
Fly in. Come over special to this United Kingdom to sign that letter. Anyway, the point is, it's taken a very long time to get to this point, I will concede. The point
there is a point.
We're not going to explain in any great detail what Performer ER is all about because we've talked about it at length on Setlist. But the other point, because there are two points here, the other point is that while all of those artists, including artists who we know Boris Johnson enjoys listening to, despite all of those artists requesting, maybe even demanding, that the Prime Minister of this United Kingdom get to Parliament and amend copyright law so to introduce ER on streams, or specifically on the making available element of the copyright, and some other stuff too. Obviously, nobody actually expects Boris Johnson to sort this out for the artist and musician community. Although it has to be said, he hasn't yet said that he will. I mean, that's normally...
So that's a good sign.
Yeah, that's a good sign. Normally, it's when Boris Johnson says that he is absolutely committed to sorting something out that you know it's never going to happen. And so there's still a chance until Boris Johnson puts out a statement saying, I'm going to fix this for you. There is still a chance that he might fix this for you. But Kevin Brennan, on the other side of the political spectrum, Labour MP, is not expecting Boris to do this. And so therefore, he is proposing the change himself. I mean, we say that we haven't yet actually seen the nitty gritty of this bill. But given what the Musicians Union and the Ivors Academy said in response to the bill being presented to Parliament, that is what we're expecting. And so Kevin is going to try and sort it out himself with a private member's bill.
So what we should do is probably explain what that is. And this is a specific type of private member's bill as well, a ballot bill. And I mean, I think particularly people in other countries, I mean, I think British politicians, particularly on the Conservative side, have a tendency to go around saying that Britain has the greatest democracy in the world and everyone should look to it for guidance in how to be a democracy. Whereas people in other countries tend to look at British democracy and go, that's a bit weird, isn't it? And I think this will undo all of that. Explaining how a ballot bill works will convince everyone that we do have the greatest democracy in the world. So this is how some laws are proposed to Parliament in the UK. Basically, a load of backbench MPs, those who aren't actively working within the government at the time, they put their names in a hat. Some of those names are drawn out of a hat. And then in the order that they were drawn out, those MPs are allowed to put forward proposed new laws. And that is why we have the greatest democracy in the whole flipping world.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like the whole system was based on a village fete. We basically, when it comes to...
I mean, that's what a lot of our parliament seems like.
When it comes to legislation being proposed by members of parliament who are not in government, so they're not also ministers, then basically we have a tombola to decide who gets to propose legislation and in what order that legislation is considered. And then people present their legislation in that order and everybody ignores everything that those people say. So yeah, this...
Yes, usually we should add, usually this is all ignored, but we're going to talk about it anyway.
These are the private member bills. Do you know, during the whole Brexit debacle, is that the way of
saying
it?
I remember it.
The whole Brexit hoo-ha, one of the things that people objected to about the European Union is how only the European Commission can take legislative proposals to the European Parliament and the EU Council. Members of the EU Council, the European Parliament in themselves can't present proposals to change the law. They can try and persuade the Commission to, but ultimately only the Commission can draft proposals that then get considered. And lots of people said, whereas here in the UK, anyone in Parliament can bring forward proposals. And it's like, well, yeah, they can. But those proposals are only going to get any serious debating time if the MP happens to be one of, well, people reckon that you probably need to be in the first 10 MPs to come out of the ballot. I think only the first 7 are guaranteed a debate in the House of Commons. So if you're beyond the first 7, then probably your proposals aren't even going to get debated. Even if you're in the first 7, the way it works is the timetable in Parliament, obviously government ministers, who are also MPs, are bringing proposed legislation to the table. And then you have private member bills like this one. And some Fridays are set aside for private member bills to be discussed. And all the other time is focused on government business. So yes, in theory, any MP in Parliament, and the similar thing happens in the House of Lords as well, can make proposals, but the chances of them getting heard are relatively low. And even if they do get heard, the chances of them going through are quite low. Because there's the other issue, that even if you are in the first 7 in the ballot, so you are guaranteed a little bit of time in Parliament for your proposals to be discussed, if the party of government in the House of Commons is against your proposals, then they are almost certainly going to be voted down. Because, of course, by definition, under the UK system, the party of government will have the majority of the seats in the House of Commons. At the moment, Boris Johnson's government has a majority of 80 seats because, yeah, that's the world we live in. And so if Boris Johnson decides, despite the estate of Joe Strummer and Paul McCartney and the Rolling Stones supporting what Kevin Brennan is proposing, if Boris Johnson's government decides they don't want it, and then they tell all of the Conservative MPs in the House of Commons to vote against it, of course, Conservative MPs don't have to vote with the party. Most of them usually do. And even if some of them don't, when your party has a majority of 80, you can afford for quite a few of your own MPs not to vote the way they are told to, and you can still defeat the legislation. So if the government don't agree with whatever it is the backbench MP is proposing, the chances of it going through are quite low. All of that said, despite us spending much of the last 5 minutes telling you why the Copyright Rights and Remuneration of Musicians, etc. bill is never going to go through and is therefore a total waste of time, despite us having gone to such lengths to explain that to you, some important things to say, which is A, private member bills, particularly the ones that are guaranteed a discussion in the House of Commons, they put big issues into the spotlight. They can actually influence government policy, because sometimes when you have a private member's bill and it's presented in Parliament and it's discussed in Parliament and it's obvious that the bill's quite popular and there's not really that much opposition, it's not a controversial bill, then sometimes government will adopt it because, well, I mean, governments like being associated with things that are popular, aren't they? So it can influence government policies. And I mean, we should say, despite everything we've just said, some private members' bills do get voted through. And I think in the last parliamentary session, something like six or seven did actually get through. So it's not completely unheard of. So despite everything we've just said in our bid to disparage British democracy and the role of private member bills, nevertheless, it is interesting to see Kevin Brennan use his opportunity, having been picked out of the ballot in sixth place. So within the seven, that means you're guaranteed a debate in the House of Commons, that he has decided, as a member of the Culture Select Committee and somebody who has been very vocal on the whole economics of streaming issue, interesting to see him use his moment in the House of Commons to see if he can force through the reforms to copyright law that organisations like the Musicians Union and the Ivors Academy and the Broken Record Campaign have been campaigning for.
Yes, and it does ensure that this issue gets debated in Parliament, which is often the point of a private member's bill. It's not necessarily expected that it will go through and become a law. It ensures that something an MP cares about can be heard by Parliament, can be debated, can be understood by more MPs to build wider support.
Yeah, because of course we are still expecting in the next month or so, I think, the report from the Culture Select Committee, of which Kevin Brennan is a member, about that whole investigation into the economics of streaming that's been going on since late last year, which will make a bunch of proposals. It may well be that applying ER to streams is one of those proposals. But of course, what happens with Culture Select Committee reports is they quite often go to a Department of Government, who then issues some sort of lackluster statement. Lots of interesting, important things here. We think there should be a round table involving everybody in the music industry. And then they kick it off to, I don't know, the Intellectual Property Office or to the Culture Department. And they say, go and do some more investigation on this. And then everyone forgets about it. That might be what happens with the Culture Select Committee's report on the economics of streaming inquiry. But because the 3rd of December, which must be a Friday, has been set to discuss Brennan's bill, it means that even if the government's response to the Select Committee report on the economics of streaming is a lackluster, kick it into the long grass type response, the whole thing will be back in Westminster to be discussed again in Parliament before the end of the year. Of course, whether or not any of this would actually bring about a change to copyright law, whatever happens, the specific demands by the MU and Ivors and the Broken Record Campaign, as set out in that letter, will get a little bit more discussion actually in the House of Commons in Westminster before the end of the year. The chances of the bill actually getting voted through do seem to be relatively low. I don't think we're going to get a revision of UK copyright law, adding ER to making available and therefore to streams that quickly. But it keeps it in the spotlight, and who knows? I mean, maybe the government will see that there's lots of support for that change, all those pop stars supporting that change, and they'll adopt it and they'll support it and it'll go through. Although, as we have also pointed out on past editions of Setlist, where we've talked about all of this, the labels in the main are against the idea that ER should be added to streams for an assortment of different reasons that we've discussed previously. And even within the artist and management community, there are some people which are very gung-ho in favour of ER on streams, saying it is the way to fix streaming, to use a term that is used as part of the MU and the Ivors Academy's campaign. But there are other artists and managers who have expressed some concern about ER. Simply changing the law to say there's ER on making available doesn't actually identify how ER would work on streaming. And there is a risk that for those particularly younger, newer, early career artists who have done much more preferential deals with labels, or possibly they've set up their own labels and they're working with a distributor, once the admin costs of running ER through the collective licensing system are taken into account, it could be that those artists are actually worse off. So it isn't as straightforward as saying everybody in the music industry thinks this is a great idea. It's uncontroversial. Therefore, Boris Johnson is going to want to adopt Kevin Brennan's legislation. I don't think that is probably going to happen. But crucially, it will ensure that this debate does not go away until at least the end of the year.
And finally, Sony has announced that it will start paying royalties to artists who signed record contracts with the company before the year 2000, but have not yet recouped on that original deal.
Yeah, so this was a big announcement from Sony that was actually circulating around the industry As we were recording the last edition of Setlist, after I'd finished recording, I went into my inbox and actually someone had forwarded me the memo that set this out. And had I checked my inbox before we started recording, maybe we would have been talking about this on last week's podcast. So it may feel a little bit like old news already, because more than a week has passed since this announcement was made by Sony, but we didn't talk about it on last week's set list. And it is quite a big development that is sort of linked to what we were talking about in the first half of this edition of Setlist. It has nothing to do with weird systems under British democracy, but it does have quite a lot to do with the whole debate around whether or not ER should be paid on streams. Because I mentioned that some artists and managers are a little bit nervous about the idea that we should pay ER on streams for various different reasons, because of the complexities of the way that ER would work and the potential inefficiencies it would introduce into the system. And what some of those artists and managers argue is, it is definitely true that at least some of those heritage artists have kind of been screwed over during the big shift to digital within the music industry, because the catalogue that was created in the 20th century has become much more valuable with the rise of streaming that removes all of the sort of logistical and transactional barriers of exploiting catalog. So labels, particularly the majors, are making more money than ever out of their catalog. And yet many of the artists who made those records are still stuck on really old record contracts, life of copyright contracts, where the label will control the rights in those recordings for as long as those rights exist. Record contracts which often pay lower royalties than what a modern record contract would, in some cases much lower royalties. There may be extra deductions that the label is able to apply on that income. And of course, quite a lot of those artists, for various reasons, have never recouped the advances they received and other recoupable costs that the label incurred back in the day. And so the argument is, yes, it is true that there's lots of heritage artists who haven't seen the benefit of the streaming boom because they're stuck on these terrible old record contracts. One solution to that is, well, if those artists were due ER on streams, they would get at least some of that money directly through the collective licensing system, and it wouldn't matter that they're stuck on these terrible old deals. Whereas some people would say, well, actually, given the potential inefficiencies of the ER system, a better thing to do would be for all the labels to say to all these heritage artists stuck on these terrible old deals, do you know what? Even though technically, under a strict reading of the contract you signed, or at least the reading that we've been using to date, you're due a lower royalty, we can apply these deductions, we can set all your streaming money off against unrecouped balances, even though potentially that's what your contract says, or it's one interpretation of your contract, screw that, we're going to treat you like you'd signed your record contract last year, we're going to pay you the higher royalty rate that newer artists are getting, which in most cases will be somewhere between 20 to 25% of streaming money. We're not going to apply any deductions to your digital income, and we're going to write off unrecouped balances after a period of time. And some people would argue that if all the labels would do that, that actually would be a better way of dealing with the inequities being experienced by heritage artists in the streaming age. It wouldn't help session musicians, it has to be said. That's another story for another day. But it would potentially address the issues when it comes to heritage artists. During the economics of streaming inquiry in Parliament, the indie labels pointed out that a number of indies, Beggars Group in particular, already apply those policies and are already doing the right thing when it comes to interpreting old contracts in the digital age. And the indies were saying the majors should follow suit. It has to be said, Sony hasn't followed suit. Sony has not done all of those things I just listed. But nevertheless, writing off unrecouped balances on pre-2000 record contracts is a significant move. And for those artists and managers who feel that labels dealing with bad old contracts is a better solution, they would say it is definitely a step in the right direction.
Now, before we all start celebrating that, maybe we should explain first what unrecouped means, or recouped even, both. So under a conventional record deal, the label invests in the recording, the release, the distribution and the marketing of the new music. And in return, it takes ownership of any sound recording copyrights created in the process of creating and putting out that new music. The label then exploits all those rights for profit, or sometimes not, but it commits to share any income it gets with the main artists who made the recordings. Now, exactly what share of that income the artist gets varies quite dramatically from deal to deal, although under conventional record contracts, the artist would receive the minority share of the most lucrative revenue streams, which these days includes streaming. And then so this other key element of the record deal is recoupment, which is where it will usually say in the contract that the label is allowed to take back any money it paid out in advances when it signed the deal and put into the recording costs and other costs along the way in putting out this music. And generally, it will say it can recoup that or take that money back from the artist's royalty. So the label is still taking money in from its share of the recording, but it's also keeping the artist's share of the royalties too, until such time that they've paid off all of those recoupable costs that the label initially laid out in the recording and release of their music. And as this chain suggests, some artists can take a very long time to recoup that money. Some artists never recoup that money. So basically saying that any deal that was signed in the 20th century will now receive royalties regardless, this will be the first time a lot of artists who signed deals a long time ago have ever seen any money from their recordings.
Now, I mentioned that some people in the artists and management community have been calling for labels to do things like this for quite some time, and actually the Music Managers Forum and the Featured Artists Coalition put a joint submission in to the aforementioned Economics of Streaming Inquiry in Parliament, and this was one of the things that they were calling for labels to write off unrecouped balances, as we call it. And one of the things that they pointed out in that submission is because the recoupable costs are recouped out of the artist's minority share, while the label continues to take its majority share, the label usually will go into profit, which means that it has actually made back all of its upfront investments in signing the artist and releasing the record. It has gone into profit quite a bit before the artist recoups. So it's not that by writing off these unrecouped balances, the label is taking a loss on the record, because the label is probably already in profit. It means that the artist, who, as you say, may have never actually received any additional royalties from the label for the recordings that they released decades ago, will now finally be getting some new royalties and can therefore share in the joy of the fact that in the streaming age, catalogue, which perhaps if we were still in the CD era, those CDs would not be available anymore, nobody would be buying them, there wouldn't be any royalties. In the streaming age, because that music is always available, even if it's not huge amounts of money, there is some money coming in, and those artists, if they're signed to Sony labels, will now benefit. We should add, Sony isn't technically writing the unrecouped balances off. It is simply saying that it's going to voluntarily start paying royalties through to artists with qualifying contracts that haven't recouped. Various theories have gone around as to why that technicality was in the statement. But it does mean that if you signed a deal with a Sony label pre-2000, you've never recouped on contract, your music is being streamed, there are some royalties coming in, you will now be getting your cut of those royalties, even though you haven't recouped.
So in its memo, Sony Music said, "As part of our continuing focus on developing new financial opportunities for creators, we will no longer apply existing unrecouped balances to artist and participant earnings generated on or after the 1st of January 2021 for eligible artists and participants globally who signed to SME prior to the year 2000 and have not received an advance from the year 2000 forward." That's a very long sentence with no punctuation.
Yeah, maybe now that they're committing to pay through royalties on these unrecouped balances, they can't afford as much punctuation as in the past.
There was a comma in there quite early on, but that's lawyers for you, isn't it?
All know that semicolons and full stops are more expensive than commas.
There was no semicolons in there, so that's good for them now that they've given up all this money. Anyway, they go on. Through this programme, comma, there we go, that's how you do it. "Through this programme, we are not modifying existing contracts, but choosing to pay through on existing unrecouped balances to increase the ability of those who qualify to receive more money from uses of their music." So there is that caveat you mentioned, that they're not writing off these balances. Technically, the artists still owe them money. I guess maybe one day, if they're hard on their luck, they could call in these debts. But we'll have to see what, if anything, comes of that little caveat. The memo concludes, We're driven by our mission to provide artists with the best levels of service. The programme we are announcing is part of that continuing work and further builds on our initiatives and investments in modernised contracts, flexible deal options, advanced data and analytics insights for creators and more.
So there you go. Big commitment by Sony Music, widely welcomed by the artist and management community. Lots of pressure now on Warner Music and Universal Music to match what Sony have committed to do. Although they've ticked one of the boxes on the list of demands from artists and managers regarding legacy contracts around unrecouped balances, there's still the issue of paying a higher modern royalty on all contracts across the catalogue and making sure that there are absolutely no deductions on streaming income. So there is still some work to be done as far as those artists and managers are concerned. But nevertheless, a move in the right direction, whether or not that move was entirely in response to the aforementioned fixed streaming and broken record campaigns and the whole economics of streaming inquiry and the suggestion that ER should be paid on streams. Because it has to be said, if all the labels, including the majors, were to do the right thing on heritage contracts, it would lessen the strength of the argument for having ER on streams. Although this is not just a UK initiative, we should stress. This is Sony Music globally, so who knows? But an interesting, relatively big development in the last 10 days or so from Sony, and we'll see whether or not they make any other commitments regarding heritage contracts. And yeah, what will Warner and Universal do?
And that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. Remember to hit the subscribe button to get new episodes delivered to your device and app of choice every single week. Go and rate and review us. That's a nice thing to do. You can email us if you've got any questions or comments about anything we've discussed in this episode at setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Moulton and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.